Welcome to Federal Insights Insider Threat, sponsored by Varonis Systems. Now here's your host, Tom Temin.
For the Defense Information Systems Agency, the insider threat is a matter of national security. For its cybersecurity insider threat chief, Paul DiMonato, it's a matter of making sure policies cover both classified and unclassified networks.
Most of our folks use both, and you set the policies on each network. Some of them are set because if you have some bandwidth limitations and you have resource limitations, and you're working for the government, so you're supposed to be doing government work.
Sure.
Perfect example is when you have like March Madness, and you have all of the basketball games and different things. That typically out in private industry, you see that as a major bandwidth hog as far as live streaming of the games. So in Department of Defense, we have to make sure that we're mindful of the bandwidth considerations, especially for the missions of the warfighters downrange.
And with respect to use of browsing and which sites you go to, that can be, I mean, prohibited sites can be blocked at the network level, correct?
Correct. Typically what we'll do is we'll have a cyber defense tool that basically categorizes the websites. In general, there's web content filtering and web categorization tools out there that basically commercial sites will say whether they're a nonprofit, they're a social media site, they're a communication or news organization, they're a sporting and gaming site, and they're categorized. And then you can basically determine from a company or a government entity organization what sites, what categories you're allowing to your network. So you can say which sites will come in, which sites won't come in. Typically, hackers and different things like that, they'll stand up non-defined sites. So they all show up as uncategorized because they haven't been categorized. And by blocking uncategorized sites right off the bat, you are hardening your web browsers from going to sites that probably have bad intentions.
And is DISA using the architecture, if you will, maybe not the best word, but the guidance and controls that are put out by the National Insider Threat Task Force?
Yes. So the National Insider Threat Task Force has come up with guidelines on some of them are procedural as far as clearance investigations, authorized accesses, limiting down who has access to particular information. One of the key minimum standards that they put in place is to make sure that you're putting user activity monitoring on your network, your classified networks, so you can monitor users' behaviors, establish kind of like a baseline, and it's basically monitoring that behavior against what your acceptable use policy is.
We're speaking with Paul DiMonato, Cybersecurity Insider Threat Chief at the Defense Information Systems Agency. You mentioned use of word processing software. How is it possible to monitor what types of files people are creating?
Based on the policies that you set in user activity monitoring software, when they open up a clipboard or a Microsoft Word application or an Excel spreadsheet or a PowerPoint, you can set your policies based if they're opening up a classified document and then they're cut and pasting without the classified markings. You can set the policy to say, hey, you have to alert on this, send an event to the analysts that are monitoring the system that this user is cut and paste this application or this data out of a Word document or a clipboard document without the classification markings. And then they printed it off or they saved it off into a file that didn't have any classification markings. It kind of shows the intent that they're trying to hide something or they're trying to move data without the proper labels and classifications on it. So the tool sets that are out there, some of the commercial products that are out there that capture that user activity monitoring actually let you set those policies.
Can you set those policies for word processing programs that are operated and hosted locally and also in the cloud, say with a product similar to Microsoft 365 or Google Docs?
Yes, as long as you have if it's in the cloud, you have control of that virtual instance or that organizational instance that you say, I want this monitoring software to be put on it, and I want the monitoring software to report to this analyst or this hub. Just like if it's on your individual box, you'll have an agent on that. It's just your individual system and it'll viewpoint where it reports to for the analyst.
And getting back to the question of phishing, you implied that there are tools available that can filter out a lot of email coming in that looks like phishing. How does all that work, and what about the ones that get through?
So a lot of those, they're called secure mail guards. A lot of them are signature-based. So a lot of your malware has certain signatures, and as long as it trips on those signatures, it'll take the action that the guard has specified, whether it's blocking, whether it's logging. Typically, most of those are blocked. But if you have some messages come through that have not been seen before and have not triggered by a signature, you can create a new signature, and then you can start logging that activity, and you can put it into blocking mode.
I imagine you have a lot more latitude in setting higher filtration for classified networks maybe than for unclassified, where you might be getting vendor information and inquiries in from a business standpoint that you wouldn't necessarily expect on a classified sense.
Correct. In the past, when we looked at the classified network, everybody had the mindset of, oh, it's a classified network, it doesn't touch the internet, we're kind of safe. Now we have to start to make sure that we're paying the same amount of attention to the classified network that we have from the unclassified network. But the unclassified network, you have more exposure to threats from a lot of different adversaries. You have a lot of the marketing spam. You have a lot of the different vendors sending you information, trying to get you to buy their products or get you to go to their events and different things like that. So you have a balance.
And when it comes to educating and training users, what are some of the techniques that DISSIT uses for its own users, and what do you recommend for the using agencies that might be using different DISSIT services?
So when a new employee comes to DISSIT, the first thing that they have is they have a newcomer's orientation. And part of their onboarding is they actually have to sign a nice legalese document of probably 10 to 11 pages of what their acceptable use of the government furnished equipment is, or their computer system. So during the newcomer's brief, we have one of our incident responders typically will go through portions of the user agreement and make sure that they know what the do's and the don'ts are. And then annually, we have users that have to take computer-based training on basically good cybersecurity practices. Another area that we've recently undertaken is every week we have a basically cyber defender question that pops up on our computer in the morning. And basically it just reinforces the lessons from the newcomer's training or the annual CBT that they have to take. So it's a continuous education feed into the individuals where they ask them questions or sometimes show them a video of proper way to telework and transport your laptop. If you're a system administrator, proper way to use your privilege, use your credentials, some phishing emails. So it might be a video, it might be a question of the day or something along those lines. So we try to do continuous education throughout the lifespan of the employee.
And do you make people explicitly aware that there is an insider threat program in place?
Yes. Separate, we also have an insider threat training that is annual. So we have insider threat questions that actually go in that weekly pool of questions that is given to the users. And then we also have a more in-depth insider threat brief that goes into some of the counterintelligence aspects, some past cases, and where we've seen different things along those lines as far as information that people are trying to get, what some users have done in the past, how you can protect against, and more importantly, some indicators of what might be indicative, might show a employee what they should be on the lookout from their peers. And it's basically what I like to say is insider threat program is only as strong as the people. Insider threat is actually a people problem. And basically, they're my best sensor out there is the peers. If you see any one of the events, they say, oh, yeah, that person always acted that way. I just didn't say anything. Every past case of an insider threat has had something like that. So one of the biggest things is trying to educate the users to say it's okay to report suspicious activity. And these are the things that we want you to look for.
Paul DiMonato is the Cybersecurity Insider Threat Chief at the Defense Information Systems Agency. In part two of the interview, DiMonato discusses some of the data analytics techniques DESA uses in its quest for better cybersecurity. We'll post the whole interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. I'm Tom Temin.
In 2016, Varonis conducted over 1,000 enterprise data risk assessments. Our findings were staggering. 47% had 1,000 sensitive files open to every employee, and 71% of all folders contained stale data. That's almost 2 petabytes. I'm George Delisle, Director of Federal at Varonis. Our software analyzes how employees use files and emails and alerts you when unusual activity occurs. View the full report at varonis.com/risk report. That's varonis.com/risk report.
When hardening your agency against cyber insider threats, a foundational step is understanding each user's normal patterns of work, hours, network bandwidth, files and applications used, that sort of thing. In part two of my interview, Paul DiMonato, Cybersecurity Insider Threat Chief at the Defense Information Systems Agency, explains why the next step is monitoring for deviations.
First, you have to look at everybody. That's the first thing. There's legal reasons why we have to do that. You basically, every single employee out there usually has a digital footprint of this is their mannerisms, this is the bandwidth they use. They either come in first thing in the morning, they'll open up email, they'll do their email for 30 minutes, then they open up a web browser, they do whatever they have to do, they open up certain applications. And basically every employee has a typical digital footprint and behavior pattern. What you have to start doing is looking for deviations, because those users have what we call stressors in their lives that have changed in behavior, whether it's intentional or unintentional. They've had a life event that has happened or something. It could just be the commute in that day was 2.5 hours, and it just put them into a bad mood, and they start to do poor security practices. So you need the software to be able to establish their baseline and their pattern and then show deviations. And then when the deviations get extreme, that's where you could start to interject for you let them know that you've seen them, and you either send them for retraining or you start an investigation depending on how severe it was. The goal is usually the employees don't start out and say, I have bad intentions right off the bat. Usually it's a gradual process, and what you want to do is you want to interrupt that gradual process early enough in the chain to let them know that you're watching, and you want to disrupt that insider threat chain and basically try to rehabilitate and make them a more productive employee.
And for looking at activities that might be out of band or aside from what is typical of a user fits their ordinary profile, what are some technical strategies for discovering those events? I mean, it's not that you don't have enough people to look at everything everybody's doing. So are there tools that can help there?
The best thing that you really need is you need some analytic tools. So basically, you're capturing these events and these triggers. And when you start to see these deviations, you need not more people looking at more triggers and events. You need actual computational software that's based on some algorithms that's looking at for those deviations. So if you have 10,000 employees and you have 200 of them all of a sudden showing deviations in their pattern. Some of those deviations are explained. It could be the end of year, end of the FY year, so you're doing a lot of contracts. So you might have your whole contracting staff working extended hours. And if you have a rich enough data set, that computational software will say, okay, these people are contract folks. They're working 14-hour days because they're trying to execute the end of year funding. It basically filters that out, and it'll only show you the one or two. You really need that strong computational analytic to be able to filter through that data.
But it seems like you also need a really well-trained IT staff to be able to set the algorithms and tell the tools what to do such that, say, the contracting activity doesn't flood the system with alerts.
You have to tweak your policies, and you're going to continually do what we call triage on to filter out the false positives. More and more, the analytic and computational algorithms are not tuned specifically. They're becoming more complex, where they're filtering out that stuff with machine learning and intelligence on their own.
Paul DiMonato is Cybersecurity Insider Threat Chief at the Defense Information Systems Agency. I'm Tom Temin.
Are you trying to follow the NIST cyber framework? If so, Varonis can help. In today's world, let's mitigate risk instead of chasing threats. I'm George Delisle, Director of Federal at Varonis. Our data security platform identifies sensitive data that's at risk and analyzes how employees use files and emails to alert you when unusual activity occurs. At Varonis, you can get a free risk assessment by going to varonis.com/NIST. That's varonis.com/NIST.
We're speaking with Paul DiMonato, Cybersecurity Insider Threat Chief at the Defense Information Systems Agency. Even though employees know this type of monitoring is going on, are there ways that you can create an atmosphere that doesn't feel like surveillance, but yet really have a good handle on what activity is happening on the network?
The best way is user education and that user agreement that I told you about earlier. You want to explain the user agreement and give some real-world examples why each one of those statements are in that user agreement. It sets a tone. Some people say it's a harsh tone, but it sets the perspective. So basically, you want to tell them that the malicious code, the unauthorized software that could be introduced into the system can harm the system and take away from the real mission that you're contributing to.
And so there is an intersection at some point between cybersecurity activity, looking for insider threat, and the formal insider threat program. When do you know when it's time to, say, elevate the surveillance of a particular person and maybe look at activities beyond what they're doing on the network?
So typically in insider threat programs, you have a what you call a hub. And the hub has different feeds from the different pillars of the insider threat program. It's the personnel security, it's violence in the workplace, it's anti-terrorism, force protection, it's counterintelligence. Cybersecurity is one pillar of them. The insider threat program as a whole will have what they call as reportable items. And those reportable items, once you meet that threshold, so in the cybersecurity event, when you hit a certain threshold, they'll have a list of cybersecurity events that they want reported to them. They get elevated up to the insider threat program. So each element will have their reportable items that they get reported up.
And what are some best practices you might have seen or adopted from industry in how it looks at people to make sure that they can be productive and have the resources they need, but also guard against insider threat situations?
Well, there's some differences with the government versus industry. We have some constitutional limitations. Usually in industry, it's basically a condition of employment, and they have a little bit more freedom on everything that they can monitor. From what they do in their private life to what they do at work. It's basically part of their organization's code of conduct, acceptable use, and company policies. With that said, there are some things that we can definitely glean from industry I like to say the biggest thing that insiders that are exploiting our systems are looking for data and exfiltrating that data off. So you need to employ a strong data management plan with some role-based access and strict procedures. I propose you make data a commodity in the organization. You silo it off, you harden it, and you isolate it off to a hardened environment. You make it available only internal to the organization. You put some extreme limitations on its portability. If you need to check it out, it has to go through an extensive external release process. So you limit down the printing, you limit down the saving of the information to portable media. You just keep it hardened off into a silo, and if you have to release it to an external organization or external another mission partner, it has to go through a formal release process.
And does the use of cloud computing in any way enhance the ability to do what you've just described?
Cloud computing is just a silo. It's a silo up in the cloud. So it definitely does strengthen it, because in the past, you've had a lot of users that have been saving data to their local systems and local machines, and they can use their floppies. You can employ some data loss prevention software to prevent that, but as long as the data is on individual systems, a smart technical person can figure a way around that. If you start limiting and not putting data on individual systems, and you only can access it through the cloud or through a silo, that limits down the portability of the data and the exfiltration threat. The other thing is you can put an expiration date on the data that you're checking out.
Paul DiMonato is Cybersecurity Insider Threat Chief at the Defense Information Systems Agency. Listen to the entire interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights Insider Threat, sponsored by Verona Systems on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search Insider Threat.